Shut up! The footy's on Triple M!
This is a Triple M footy news update.
This is massive, this story.
Got a little exclusive.
With Tom Brown.
Wednesday the 16th of June, and after a huge week in footy, it's time for another Triple M footy news update with Tommy Brown. My name's Rudy, and I've got Tom on the phone from Sydney to discuss all the big news, including a landmark tribunal case, the latest on an investigation at Hawthorn, and some injury news. How are you going up there, Tommy?
Yeah, good, Rudy. It's like the Hotel California. I feel like I've been here forever, but we are returning officially to Melbourne this afternoon. I should be back in the studio with you on Friday. I'm looking forward to getting back to Melbourne.
I'm looking forward to it as well. So let's get stuck in. No time to waste. David McKay and Hunter Clark tribunal case is tomorrow night. What's the latest?
Well, the latest in regards to McKay, obviously, is he'll front the tribunal tomorrow night. It's an interesting issue because of the fact that McKay didn't look like he elected to bump. So effectively, there's no rule that necessarily covers what he did. And a lot of football traditionalists believe if McKay is rubbed out, as the AFL wants, it will be basically an indictment on the game. And other concussion advocates think it's important for players to bear a higher duty of care. And it's the perfect type of example where a player should be rubbed out. Some information I've got for you this morning just on Hunter Clark's injury. I've reported it this week. I think it's now been fairly widely reported, but the injury to Hunter Clark is staggering, even by broken jaw standards. It's basically a crack from the bottom of his front teeth down to the bottom of his jaw, and from the back, a separate crack from the back of his teeth to the point of the jaw, which means, in effect, part of the jaw was, I guess you could say, hanging off, and that's what it looks like in the scans that Hunter Clark got back. In terms of the AFL's approach, that's also an interesting aspect to all this. The AFL itself has conceded that it's not necessarily rough conduct and wants the tribunal to grade it though as careless, high and severe. So on the AFL's own admission, they don't think it necessarily fits within the classifiable offence. They think it's sufficient to be unreasonable conduct, but even that's a little bit wishy-washy by their own admission. They want the tribunal, they've effectively handed it over ungraded, and they want the tribunal to come up with a classification. My point on that, which several commentators, including I think Jared Waitley, have made this week, is the tribunal's not there to make the laws, it's there to apply the laws. So I think it will be up to the AFL. I think McKay will probably get off and it'll be up to the AFL to adjust the rules to take into account these types of circumstances. But we'll find out more tomorrow night. It's a pretty staggering situation.
It's pretty remarkable. I can't remember anything like it, really. Will this lead to a precedent of the tribunal being asked to do this more often? Is that the worry, or is this just going? Is this just one of those scenarios where no one really knows what to do?
No, I agree with a sentence I think I read in a Fox Footy article this week, or it might have been someone that expressed this opinion. It might have been Jared Waitley. I suspect Steve Hocking knows that there's no rule that applies to this, but it's got to be put in the public domain and the tribunal domain, and there needs to be discussion around it. And I think the AFL probably know it might be a weak case tomorrow night. But going forward, I guess they'll have to amend the rules. A lot of people think this will ruin football, Rudy, but the point I've made to several people this week is that what will ruin football is concussion litigation and the prospect of every player in the future wearing a helmet or the path we're going down. You know, America is the most litigious place in the world. What do they all do in America, in NFL? They all wear helmets. Now, I know there's divergent views on whether helmets assist or exacerbate concussion in AFL and all those types of things. But we're headed down a litigation pathway with concussion. There's no doubt about that. And in my view, unless the AFL, which has a duty to protect the game, adjusts some of the rules, you know, we might not have a game. I mean, bullfighting is not allowed anymore either. And I'm not suggesting AFL's bullfighting, but in 60 or 70 years under the eyes of the law, it might be. So you've got to move with the times, in my view.
Yeah, it's a pretty fascinating test case. All eyes on the tribunal tomorrow night. A fixture update, Tommy.
Yeah, fixture update. So it doesn't still look like we'll get crowds in Geelong on Friday night, although the AFL is working with the state government to see if they can make an allowance, but it doesn't appear that'll happen. Obviously, the Bulldogs look like they'll have to come to Sydney next week to basically stay headed before they head to Perth, as per WA regulations. And I think, really, the discussion's now going to turn to the impact of this huge fixture delay and or fixture adjustment, and in particular, no crowds in Victoria, on the AFL's finances. And that's going to affect the players' pay negotiations and also the AFL, the soft cap, which is the amount the footy departments can spend and really is the amount that the coaches get. And this blip, or whatever you want to call it, this temporary lockdown, I don't know what the buzzword was for it originally when we all thought it would be 7 days. But it's cost the AFL now a staggering amount of money, and in turn, the clubs and the players.
Yeah, right. I think it was called a circuit breaker.
So, a circuit breaker. Yeah. It's been a financial time bomb, Rudy, rather than a circuit breaker as far as the interruption of the season's gone.
Indeed. And I suppose that must be also pushing back the release of the next set of fixtures as well, because I think it's round 16, I think, is not yet fully fixtured.
The AFL's working on a week-by-week basis. There is hope, of course, we'll get crowds back the week after next, but I said the same thing this time last week. So it's very hard for the AFL to sell tickets with that uncertainty around.
Mm, indeed. All right, let's move on to Hawthorn. There's an AFL investigation going on, Tommy.
Yeah, so an investigation into Mitch Lewis's concussion boxing incident. And I revealed this investigation on Saturday night on our coverage. The Mitch Lewis boxing incident, I think, had been reported on by Tom Morris, but basically his boxing last week got concussed. The AFL Players Association asked the AFL to investigate it. The AFL is investigating it. Justin Reeves, the Hawks CEO I've been in contact with over the last sort of 4 or 5 days or so, emphasised that it was an unfortunate training accident. No one was authorised to hit the head. Hawthorn filmed the incident. They're satisfied it was just an accident. But the AFL's looking further into this. You know, Hawthorn could, in theory, get sanctioned. But I think there's a broader question about whether players should be boxing at all these days. I mean, we don't allow hits to the head on the field. So query why clubs are doing it as an exercise, during training, albeit to the body. Clarko had told them to sort of up the ante a little bit on training last week. I'm not blaming Clarko, but that's obviously going to be one aspect of the investigation. And even Hawthorn yesterday conceded in an interview on SEN, the CEO, that they might adjust these training drills. I don't think Lewis was wearing full padding either, which, again, will be a focus of the investigation. I know clubs have been doing boxing for donkey's years, but usually not involving injuries like this. And with the focus now on the head and the risks of concussion, I think it's quite a big issue.
Yeah, indeed. Another one to keep an eye on there. You've got the latest on the Dane Beams retirement salary cap situation, Tommy.
Yeah, I'm pressing hard on this, Rudy, because Dane Beams on SEN said last week that his payout wasn't included in Collingwood's salary cap. The AFL issued a statement to me on Sunday night explaining that it was all approved, basically, under their TPP rules, and they're keen for the integrity of the TPP to be maintained. So any approvals of any, say, mental health allowance outside the cap would have to be done under the AFL's rules. So that's reassuring. But it doesn't answer the critical question, which I think a lot of clubs want to know, is how much, say by way of percentage, if it's confidential, of Beams' payout was outside Collingwood salary cap approved by the AFL. I understand that other clubs, up to three or perhaps more, clubs have applied for similar relief for players in recent years and got knocked back. So the clubs, A, I think, want to know how much, B, are a bit miffed, and C, would like to know the criteria.
Mm. Okay, that's yet another one to watch there, isn't it, really, on that front? Let's move on to Carlton. Tommy, there's a big review going on in their coaching department.
Yeah, I put out last Friday the review panel, which Carlton also issued in a release shortly after. It includes Jeff Walsh from Collingwood, who was involved with Collingwood up until the latter part of last year. A guy called Graham Lowe was the previous footy boss at the Bulldogs. Also the incoming president, Luke Sayers, and Matthew Pavlich. That's the four-person panel. My view on that, Rudy, is that it's unlikely that would include David Teague's job. I just don't think, with no disrespect to that panel, it just doesn't seem like a heavy panel, in inverted commas, that would get rid of David Teague. Having said that, that remains to be seen. So I think David Teague would, seek some comfort from that panel, to be perfectly frank. Jeff Walsh is also on the board currently of the Coaches Association, so I can't imagine that he's going to preside over a review that sees a coach lose his job. Having said, I think they've got to review whether he's got to step off that board this week, at least temporarily, just to avoid that potential conflict. Obviously, Matthew Pavlich would have a relationship with Brad Lloyd, the Carlton footy boss from back in their Fremantle days. And I think Kane Little knows Graham Lowe. So I don't think there'll be the wholesale changes out of this review that some people at the moment predict. Having said that, that's just only a read on the situation at this stage.
So not quite the grueling, warts and all review that other clubs have seen at the end of seasons recently?
I don't think it'll include David Teague. I mean, the clubs say, because it is the entire football department, they can see that, I guess, David Teague is, in theory, part of that. I think it'll see some assistant coaches definitely lose their jobs, unfortunately for them, and some change. but I don't think it'll see David Teague. Having said that, they've only just started. So it's just a read on the situation at this stage, Rudy.
Yep. Okay. Brighter on-field news for Carlton yesterday in Harry Mackay signing a 2-year extension.
Yeah, Harry Mackay signed a 2-year extension, which is good news for the Blues. That'll obviously take him through to the start of his free agency, which is what a lot of players are doing these days. On a deal with up to $850,000 a year. Next, you'd expect the announcement surrounding Cripps. Having said that, we've been saying that week in, week out for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, which I know must be frustrating for some Carlton supporters, but you've heard Cripps speak about it and the club. They all insist that it's awfully close. So I expect that we'll get an announcement through on our Twitter, our Instagram feed soon, Rudy, but it just hasn't happened yet.
Okay, indeed. Injury updates. There's a couple. There's a big one at Collingwood in Darcy Moore.
Yeah, Darcy Moore has a PCL knee injury that they say is going to be 8 to 12 weeks, which you'd think, given their latter situation, that would be season. And DeGoey's been suspended for a week, so a bit of a rough start for Robert Harvey. Obviously, Collingwood coming off perhaps the upset of the year against Melbourne at the SCG on Monday.
Yeah, well, that's always going to be a hard act to follow, that win, and it's just gotten much, much harder for him. Bloody hell, Darcy Moore, 12 weeks, that's a real tough one.
I was there, Rudy, and thought the weight was off Collingwood's shoulders, and that's not no disrespect to Nathan Buckley, because I know the players were enormously proud to be able to deliver that effort, but they certainly played with a freedom that we haven't seen all year.
Yeah, they did indeed, and that man you mentioned, Jordan DeGoey, big part of that. Jack Viney, how's he going?
Yeah, I spotted him running around the SCG post-game on Monday night, and he's just running with the rehab group, or their extras they'd brought up, basically, because the players that are held over have to do extra running after the game. And he's had this toe injury, which always worries me with Viney, given his foot history, but he was running well, so I expect hopefully he'll come back after the bye.
Mm. Good news for Melbourne fans there. Just before we go, you've got a final one on Gil McLachlan.
Yeah, just a quirky one on Gil McLachlan. No pressure for Gil McLachlan to depart the job. All the clubs would be happy for him to stay at the AFL as long as he wants to. But he's always flagged that he won't be there forever. There is some discussion in the background about who his successor will be, whether it's internal or whether it's external from a club or external from business. I've been told over the last week or so that the commission chairman, Richard Goyder, is a supporter of Travis Old, who's an internal. He's basically the deputy in charge of the AFL and would be an internal candidate to fill that role. What's interesting about that is Brendan Gale, who a lot of clubs think, the Richmond CEO, would be the natural successor to Gil. So it's going to be an interesting situation there as to who gets that job. But it doesn't look like it would be an uphill battle, it looks like, for Gale to get that job at this stage, given the fact that the commission chairman seems to support Travis Old at this stage. I reported on this podcast a few weeks ago that Gale's relationship with the AFL a bit up and down. Like, Richmond made those comments regarding Marvel Stadium, which is the main asset of the AFL, the billion-dollar jewel in the crown of the AFL's asset portfolio recently. You wouldn't think that would necessarily go down well at the AFL. Having said that, Richmond's a proud independent club and he can make whatever comments he wants. But it does look like at this stage that Richard Goyder, the commission chairman, supports Travis Old. There's a long way to go on in that space, but it is bubbling away in the background, discussion in club land on that.
Mm. Yet another wait and see there, Tommy. We've had a few of those today. Thanks for joining us all the way from Sydney. You're flying home the Savo, correct?
So this afternoon with a little man, 20 weeks old Henry, which is always a bit of fun. Although he's a good flyer, and Tara, who's a great wife and a good help. So we'll get back with about 4 suitcases and Henry, Rudy.
Well, very exciting. I look forward to seeing you in here on Friday, Tommy. But thanks for calling in. We'll see you then.
Can't wait. See you, mate.